Good morning. I'm going to talk a little bit about nitrogen-carbon mineralization from various peanut varieties under simulated conservation and conventional tillage at two different locations. The work was done while I was at Auburn University. I'm now at Virginia Tech. The United States is the fourth largest peanut producer in the world. China is by far the largest peanut producer. By region within the United States, about 58% of peanut production is conducted produced in the southeastern United States. If you look at this graph here, this is data provided by the USDA. If you compare conventional till peanut versus conservation till peanut, you can see a slight increase in the number of producers who are practicing conservation tillage along with peanut production. Obviously, conventional tillage takes the lion's share, but we're starting to notice an increase in interest for conservation tillage peanut. There's some questions about nitrogen credits to subsequent crops following peanut production. Typically, those residues are buried into the ground. And there's some debate whether or not subsequent crops ought to be given some kind of end credit for those residues. But there's a further question: is what happens if we leave those residues on the ground? Does that change the scenario at all? Most of the information that's available on nitrogen release from peanut residues is available from lab studies. Ours is actually a litter bag based field study. The objective was therefore to assess the carbon, nitrogen, and mass loss rates from three different peanut varieties at two locations under simulated conservation tillage and conventional tillage. We use a 2x2x3 factorial, so that's two locations, two tillage types, and three different varieties, and they were placed on a completely randomized design, obviously blocked by location. And with four replications, there was post-harvest residue was packed at a rate of 4.5 tons per hectare on an air-dry basis. The residues were packed at an air-dry basis, but all the data is shown on an oven-dry basis. There's one caveat to this, that the residue of the variety NCV11 in North Carolina was placed at a different rate, at a lower rate. It happened to rain before we get those residues out of the ground, and they were wet, so you'll see some funkiness in the data when it comes to NCV11, but in North Carolina. But all the other residues were placed at equal rates. A little bit about the varieties. A. Norden was released in 2002. It's shown some good tomato spotted wilt virus resistance. NCV11 is a Virginia type. It also has some tomato spotted wilt virus resistance as well as white mold resistance. And then there's GAO2C, another runner type released in 2002, and it's shown to have some resistance properties as well. Here's the peanut production map of the United States. You can see that most of the peanut producing areas are concentrated in the southeast, a little bit here in western Texas. Our sites were located in Rocky Mount in North Carolina and at the Wiregrass Research Station in Headland, Alabama. So the study was designed to look at both the northern and southern limits of U.S. peanut production. As I said, it was a completely randomized design, blocked by location. To mimic tillage, we would go ahead and till the site and then place the litter bag 10 centimeters below the soil surface. And then obviously for conservation tillage, we just pin the bags to the soil surface. And then the litter bags would be periodically retrieved from 0 to 335 days after placement and then brought back to the lab, analyzed for mass, total carbon, and nitrogen. And then all the values were placed on an ash-free dry weight basis to account for any contamination that might have been contamination by soil particles that might enter through the litter bag. Or you get ants coming in and chewing holes through your litter bags, and you might get some soil entry that way as well. But we accounted for that by converting to an ash-free dry weight basis. A little bit about the model that we used. We used a double exponential decay model. I really like this model. A lot of times in the literature you see single exponential decays, which might be appropriate for some types of residue, particularly like high C to N ratio residues. But for peanut residue, I find the double exponential decay model works really well because you've got an initial rapid decomposition of your labile portion of the nutrients, labile carbon, labile nitrogen, and then you follow it by a recalcitrant portion. And of course, you can conduct tests to find out whether or not this second term is significant. It's not significant. It can collapse into a single exponential decay model. So obviously, this is representing your labile carbon or your labile nutrients, and this is the last term here is representing your recalcitrant portion. So if we look at the mass remaining, this is in tons per hectare. You got tons per hectare on the y-axis, and then you've got time and days after placement on the x-axis. The buried residue is here on the right. The buried residue is on the left. The surface placed residue is on the right. The Wiregrass station in Alabama is on the top, and the North Carolina station is on the bottom. So I know this is a lot of data, but this is the easiest way to make a comparison among all the treatments. A. Norden is the solid line. GAO2C has the open circle and NCV11. Doesn't really matter because the first thing you're going to notice is it doesn't really matter which varieties you're using. They're all decomposing at pretty much the same rate. So we're finding here that variety doesn't really matter. What we do find is that the buried residues tend to decompose faster. That's not surprising. That's well known in the literature. What you do see here is the much more rapid decay in the labile portion of that residue, whereas the when you surface place, that labile portion of the residue decomposes at a slightly slower rate. If you compare between sites, the Alabama station versus the North Carolina station, Alabama tends to release its mass a little bit faster, regardless of placement, than at North Carolina. If you look at the carbon remaining, again, there's no difference between varieties. Here you'll see the NCV11 placed at North Carolina is decomposing a lot faster. Like I said at the beginning, that was placed at a lower rate. Mass loss or decomposition rates are inversely proportional to the amount of residue that's placed on the soil surface. So if you place less residue, it decomposes faster. That's seen in the literature as well. So, and that's the effect that we're seeing here. The other thing I want to point out here is that there's no statistically significant difference between the rates of this recalcitrant portion. So regardless of placement and regardless of location, the recalcitrant portion is decaying at the same rate. What the difference is between locations and between conventional and conservation tillage is all occurring here in the labile portion of the residue. If you surface place it, that labile portion decomposes at a slower rate. So here you're looking at about 50% residue, 50% carbon remaining after about 2 months. Not a whole lot of time. But if you bury that residue, you're looking at about 50% of that carbon remaining at about, 3 weeks. So there's some differences to be seen there for sure. But in the recalcitrant portion, the decay rates aren't really changing. And then for the nitrogen remaining, here we have it in kilograms per hectare on the y-axis. It's much same story. Again, you see the NCV11. We'll just ignore that data for now. You can tell that if you don't place much residue out there, it just decomposes really fast. But if you look at the other varieties, the other treatments, again, there's no difference between varieties. And again, your recalcitrant portions are decaying at about the same rate. And you're seeing that same difference, you're seeing the same slower decay rate in the labile portion of those residues. Now, if you're looking at how much nitrogen can I apply to a subsequent, or how much nitrogen credit can I give to a subsequent crop, it depends. Are you talking about a winter cover crop, or are you talking about the following spring? In this case, let's say at North Carolina, it doesn't really make a whole lot of difference. You're losing most of your... almost half of your nitrogen within the first couple of weeks. If you plant winter rye or something like that into your peanut residue, you're probably only talking about, say you plant here, and then, say you, you know, you kill out here, you're looking at maybe 10 kilograms per hectare. So, you know, same thing here in Alabama. You know, if you plant within 2 weeks, you know, you're not talking about a large nitrogen credit that you're getting from these peanut residues. So with that, in conclusion, we found that we did have faster decomposition in Alabama than we did in North Carolina. Carbon happened to be mineralized faster from buried residue. That's not surprising. The nitrogen was released faster from buried residue at North Carolina, but we didn't see residue nitrogen release rate differences in Alabama regardless of placement. And we would conclude from this study that nitrogen credits aren't warranted to subsequent crops. So with that, I'd like to thank you, and I don't know if I have time for questions.
Yes, you have almost 4 minutes.
4 minutes? Yes, sir.
I'm surprised that you haven't taken into account the effect of temperature or moisture. You're doing the study at various places, and those have been very important for the, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Also, I think to make a conclusion, you really have to wait. You do this experiment in the field over time, over years, and then come to some conclusion. But, you know, a one-year type thing, I don't think you can really come to a conclusion.
Yeah, I think those are valid criticisms. I didn't really get into the climate data, but obviously North Carolina tends to be colder than Alabama, which is why presumably we're seeing a slower decay rate in North Carolina, so that makes sense. Obviously, in the full paper that goes to publication, we'll include climate data. And then as far as a multi-year study, yeah, I concur. That would be, it would be wonderful to have multiple year data for this, but you know, we start with this one, and you know, if somebody wants to pick up the ball on it, we can do it for further years. We also did a laboratory incubation as well to try to control for some factors. But like I said, most of the literature on this kind of data set is conducted in the laboratory. So we wanted to bring it out to the field and see under actual field conditions what those differences were. So yeah, so we've got lab studies which are showing much the same results that we're seeing here. And then as far as future studies, that's another possibility. Yes, sir?
First one for Dr. Baroni as well, and his PhD student has a 14-year study on a similar study like this, but in the field for over 14 years. You might want to talk to him.
On peanut residue?
No, various crops.
Right.
Including legumes.
Okay, yep, very good. I've done a lot of this kind of work myself. So yeah, it would be interesting to talk to him and see what kind of results he's getting, see where he's working too. Any other questions? Thank you.